Welcome to Adequate Yearly Progress, Episode 6. My name is Erin Sterling, and I'm the librarian at Eckstein Middle School in Seattle, Washington. Every episode, I interview a different teacher and find out why they became a teacher, and what they like about it, and what they don't like about it. In this episode, I interview another friend, Amity Gann, who used to work with me as a science teacher at Eckstein Middle School, and recently moved to Philadelphia. Amity is a teacher I've admired for her dedication to science education and the teaching of rigorous research methods, as well as her openness to serving all types of students, which often included working with students through her lunch and after school. We also share a love of nerd culture and science fiction and fantasy books. On a podcast and audio note, I apologize for a few moments in this podcast where I could not edit out the background noise, namely my dog barking and sounds of a door opening and closing. Obviously, I'm still learning how to do this, so thanks for being patient. All right, let's go. Hi, Amity. I'm glad you're on my show. For everyone listening, this is Amity Gann, and she was a teacher with me at Eckstein Middle School last year in Seattle, Washington, and has been there way before I was. And now, sadly for us at Eckstein, is moving to Philly, where I know that she's going to be pursuing things, and she will tell you about that in a minute. So, Amity, could you tell me about yourself and why you became a teacher, and also maybe what you're doing now or what you're thinking of doing?
Yeah, that's a difficult story. I never know where to begin whenever someone asks me why I became a teacher or how I became a teacher. Because either you could start in high school, where I was voted most likely to return to my high school to teach, which almost happened. Yeah, very bizarre. But really, it wasn't until I was in graduate school for molecular cell biology. I was TAing, and I TA'd college students before, you know, undergrads. But there was just something about TAing seniors and finding that they didn't know really basic things that kind of made things click for me. So I thought back, you know, I was like, okay, well, when should people learn this stuff? And it just hit me that I really should just go back and become a middle school science teacher. So yeah, it's kind of a weird roundabout sort of way, but
I feel like a lot of people's stories actually are, which is kind of fun to hear.
Yeah.
So you always knew you wanted to be middle school then?
Once I decided I wanted to be a teacher, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I know that maybe things are still up in the air, but what are you thinking of doing now?
Oh, I have lots of things I'd like to do. One of the things that I've been thinking about most recently is first just getting myself established as a volunteer in schools in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. The schools there are really terrible. They have horrible funding. They're almost all charter schools. It's a mess. It's just a mess. Mm-hmm. When we were looking for houses, one of the things you always see is, you know, how does the local neighborhood school rank? And they're all ones out of 10.
Wow.
Really, really bad. So, I mean, really, as a volunteer, I think even just that would make a big difference.
Yeah.
Once I find kind of what it looks like Philadelphia really needs and where I might fit in, what I'm thinking is probably I'll end up getting a job. I'd like part-time would be ideal. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to school and get probably an Ed.D. in teaching leadership. So I can actually be a curriculum leader and do stuff like that.
Cool. So that would mean that you're kind of hired by a school district to help design curriculum, or I guess it doesn't have to be a school district.
Actually, right now, I think my dream job would be to be placed in a school, a specific school for a year, work part time where I have my actual like classroom and students that I work with. Uh-huh. But then the other rest of the time be grant funded and be a teacher leader where I can mentor other teachers and help them. I just think that
would
be really neat.
So great.
Thank you.
You'd be really great. I've learned a lot from her over these few years that I've been at Eckstein. So tell me what's rewarding about being a teacher.
There's a lot. I mean, I meet so many interesting people. I learn new things every day. I love to learn. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's definitely a job that keeps me busy. I've had jobs where I've gotten bored, mm-hmm. and this does not bore me at all. There's always something new, and I like the challenge mm-hmm. of working with different learners and uh-huh. different topics and stuff. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Was there anything that surprised you about teaching when you first started teaching, or maybe that continues to surprise you?
Yeah, I don't know if there's something that really surprises me. I think the fact that I've been able to find who I am through my teaching more. Mm. When I first started, I was really nervous about being me. Uh-huh. You're going through school and they're all like, you should do this and you should do that and you shouldn't do this. And, you know, and it's like, well, really what you ultimately have to do is just figure out who you are and mm-hmm. what you have to bring to the table. And, you know, it's been really nice to kind of be a science teacher during the uprising of nerd culture, because yes. I have such a following of nerds.
Yeah,
it's been really nice. You know, I can be like, oh yeah, make some reference and kids will laugh, and I'll be like, wow, that would have gone over kids' heads 10 years ago, but uh-huh. these kids are digging it. It's really nice.
That's great. Do you feel like you allowed yourself over the years of teaching you've done to let that emerge, or was that just something, it was natural? And
it's just natural. Okay. I'm a nerd. Yeah. There's really no way around it. I think another thing that's been really nice is another impetus for working with middle school uh-huh. is as being an out teacher. And that's been mm-hmm. a journey. I mean, when I first started teacher ed programs, I talked to other teachers and I actually was told explicitly not to be out.
Really? By your school?
By people at my university.
Oh.
They were like, oh no, don't be out. That's not a good idea. And I had a hard time doing student teaching and stuff. It was really rough.
Yeah.
But I am glad that over the years, kids taught me that they were like, no, you really should just be out. You should just don't play the pronoun game. Don't mm-hmm. do that. They're like, we'd rather just know. And, you know, it's better that way. So it's yeah. been really nice.
Did you notice when you kind of first came out to students or the first year, the difference?
Yeah, it was kind of funny, actually. So science teachers have to teach sex ed. We have to. Uh-huh. State law mandates we have to teach just HIV AIDS like 2 days.
Okay.
But the district ideally wants you to teach like 2 weeks to a month if you have the time that you can fit it in.
Uh-huh.
Which I wish I did. I really wish I did. So I had my sixth graders and I had all these sixth graders who really sweet. I mean, they're sixth graders. They're very elementary. Yes, I had one kid who literally would crawl around on the floor and like roll on the floor. You know, just bizarre. And another kid who would be like attached to my side and follow me all throughout class. Just crazy, you know. But I felt just it was so important to really highlight mm-hmm. how during puberty, it's really normal to have attraction to right. all different kinds of people. You're just starting to figure out what that means. And so it may mean nothing or it may mean something. It doesn't really matter. And I got really, really emotional talking about it. Not really personal, but just very, very emotional. And one of the kids, he went home and was like, I'm pretty sure Ms. Gann is gay. And his mom was like, oh, and he told her what happened. And he's like, yeah, you know, kind of like our uncle. And so she came back, like, I got riffed. And so she helped pack up my classroom. And okay. she told me this story like 3 weeks later. And I was like, yeah, I was pretty emotional during that. But following that, I had a kid come out to me uh-huh. as questioning. And, you know, I mean, I think it really made a big difference to just be really
yeah, honest. I think it's been interesting talking to kids and just the resurgence for me as a librarian. The there's not a whole lot, but there's more and more LGBT stuff mm-hmm. coming out. And I've been really impressed. I think when I started a couple of years ago, Seattle's a pretty liberal city, right?
Yes.
I mean, so it wasn't that I was nervous, but I was like, oh, can I, like, I don't know. When I talk about the book, is it just going to be normal? And I realized, like, that was weirdly on me. And so mm-hmm. then when I did it the first time, like, there were a few kids who were taken aback where I usually talk about, like, you know, there's the romance or this guy is a crush on this other guy. But for the most part, I found that kids were really open to it. And the more that I talked about it, it was kind of the more that the rest of the kids became comfortable with yeah. it. So when I go and do book talks, where the kids, there were maybe a few kids who seemed uncomfortable at first, were kind of like, oh, okay, it's just another of one of Sterling's book talks, if they were even listening. But
just another romance anyway. Right. Who cares?
yes. I don't actually need to read that. But
yeah. But unfortunately, that's not true everywhere in Seattle.
No. And definitely, you
know, North Seattle is very unique.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've only had the experience teaching mm-hmm. at Eckstein. But and I haven't had any response or any pushback. Mm-hmm. But I was hopeful
yes,
about it.
Yes. Things have changed a lot.
Things are changing a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
What were early challenges for you as a teacher, or maybe continuing challenges? It could be both.
I think, you know, since I have sort of this, I always have this big picture idea of what I want to teach, and mm-hmm. I'm always thinking 10 years down the road.
Yeah.
I'm very rarely thinking about what a seventh grader needs. I'm thinking about what does a seventh grader need so that they can become a college student or an engineer or, you know, beyond.
Right.
An intelligent voter. You know, like there's just always these yep. things that are not now, like the but big things. Way future. And I think sometimes I just get really caught up in these like big ideas that then I'm like, oh, darn it, there's so much I want to do. And then I get kind of overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So over the years, learning how to kind of narrow things down and make sure I stay focused, which on the one hand is actually a blessing because I can go into a class and I plan the heck out of things.
Right.
And it's like crazy how much I plan. But
it's true.
I'm not so tied to my plans that I can't just change mm-hmm. in a moment's notice. So the biggest stressor for me is really the parents, dealing with parents, having them always second guess kind of mm-hmm. what I know and what I'm capable of. I've had parents, you know, I had a parent come in. She had all this paperwork that she was like, my child has a learning disability, but it was like not identified. It was a really generic, like we paid money to have this done. Okay. And she spent 20 minutes telling me, repeat after me. The goal for my child is to be successful in science. And I'm like,
She wanted you to actually repeat
that? After her. Oh. Yes. And I mean, it was weird. Humiliating, you yeah. know, and to be sitting there like, but that isn't exactly my goal. My goal is right. to educate your child, and whether they're successful or not is not actually entirely on me. It's
right.
on them.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's kind of to this point where I just dread checking emails and checking my voice messages, and it's not like it happens that often, but I'm enough of a harsh critic of myself that it's bad enough. So that's sort of my biggest stressor. However, being prepared, and I've been able to, you know, just kind of shut parents up by being like, look, here's where you can find the information you need, here's why I did this, here's what I'm looking for, here are ways to fix it, here are some strategies. And, you know, there's not really any way they can argue with that.
Right, right. I guess that makes sense, even though it still seems very stressful to deal with. Are there any supports that you've found at school that have helped you with that or any other challenges?
I think just feeling supported generally by administration mm-hmm. has been really nice. It's a big difference. At the school I was at before, I was not really well supported by administration.
Uh-huh.
It was horrible. I was a ball of stress for 3 straight years. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I went home and cried every day. It was bad. And it really came down to the vast majority of the administration was not supportive of the teachers. It was just a really bad place to be. And being at Eckstein, I don't know what happened. I don't know. I'm not sure how this happened, but somehow it went from the administration at my old school somehow got across the message that I was actually a good teacher to the new school. And so I went from having, like, rarely administration come to my room, but when they talked to me, they were always very kind of rude, to being at Eckstein where rarely administration come in, but when they did, they were always like, you're doing great, this is really great, and this is really positive. So somewhere in those that time, something changed.
Something happened.
But it's really nice, you know, like I can go to Sherry, and I have gone to Sherry, been like, oh my god, I got this email, what the heck, and you know, she'll be like, okay, you know what, just, you can ignore it, you can do this,
right,
that.
Right.
But it's not on me,
right,
know?
It's not just, it's like a negative criticism,
right. And so that's been a really big thing. I mean, having teachers who support you, that's great. But what ends up happening is teachers kind of build on each other with the kind of negative stuff.
Yes,
sometimes.
Yes.
But having an administrator who will say, you know what, you can't treat our teachers this way. Mm-hmm. You, or actually says to a teacher, you're doing a good job.
Right.
I mean, you rarely hear that. I can't say I've heard it that often, but they can show it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of them is that sign of respect, that they trust you when you come to them and say, this is what actually happened.
Uh-huh.
They don't second guess you.
Yeah. I think I heard once that we, for every like 10 positive comments we hear, we remember like the negative, or what, I don't know what the way of putting it, but basically that we remember negative comments like yes. way more, which is actually helpful to me thinking of a teacher, mm-hmm. Myself, of like, oh, kids will remember the negative stuff. So you need to make sure that you're also putting in what they're strong at, or
right.
what they're working towards, or what they're growing towards, or things like that.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned a little bit of like the parents being stressors. Is there anything else that's frustrating about teaching?
Not enough hours in the day. Having to do a million different things. I feel like I've worked with so many kids, and the kids I love to work with the most are always the neediest kids. It's really kind of, it's bad. I mean, a part of it's because it's me. Like, I grew up in a poor household, and I needed stuff, and I, you know, my parents were divorced, and oh. I mean, I identify with these children. And, you know, school for me was a safe place, and so I want kids to have that same kind of thing. Right. So I go out of my way. Like, my classroom is open at lunch. If kids want to come in, they can sit and eat in my classroom. And it's always been that way. And, you know, off and on, I'll just have, like, groups of kids who come in and they'll hang out. And it's not that they're hanging out with me, because mostly we don't interact at all. But it gives them a place that's quiet. It's not the lunchroom, which is chaos incarnate. And it's just, yeah. So I think having kind of that nice, like, I don't know, connection with students, yep. but because they're so needy, I also work extra hard, right? I don't have breaks. I always have a kid in my room. I am working after school. I'm not doing prep right after school. I have kids in there, or I'm off checking in with the different homework centers, or talking to teachers about students that I need to, you know, work with, or, you know, whatever it is. And then it's not until 4 o'clock that I can actually start doing the stuff that I should have probably been doing at 2:30. And, you know, so then I'm at work until 7 and so forth.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's something you would want to work on more in the future, is trying to get a kind of home life balance, or is that just that's what you give into it? Like, do you think you could do that for forever?
Oh no, God no. it's sort of my nature. I mean, it's kind of like right now the thing I'm focusing on is taking care of myself, and it's I can do one thing, and that thing I do really, really well, but I can't do anything else, and I'm not really sure how to make it more balanced. And I've tried really hard over the years, and last year was way better. Okay. I mean, I was still at work kind of late, but it was nice. You know, I had a great student teacher, so that made things a lot easier for me. I barely had to do any grading, which took a lot off of my table.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I want to balance out, which is part of why I'd rather be part-time teaching and part-time mentoring. Mm-hmm. Just, I think that would help with my sanity and not eating too much of my personal life.
Right. Yeah, because I feel like personally one of the challenges is there's a lot that's put on teachers and ever mm-hmm. more. And there's a lot, I think, that most good teachers I know, they want to be looking for how do you improve and how do you change? And then you also have stuff coming in from district about, okay, yeah, now you have to keep this extra data. So mm-hmm. That's why I ask, because
it's
one of the challenging parts about like not making your whole thing, but also, you know, being a really good teacher,
right,
and
exactly.
wanting to be a really good
teachers,
teacher.
As you said, they want to do these things. Yeah. You know, I'm not a coach. It's not my style, but I like helping kids with homework and you know, giving them support that they need.
So what could you think of any moments that where you've really felt like, yes, I'm a good teacher? It could be a specific thing or just things you do, because you are a really good teacher and I've seen really good examples of that. So what makes you feel like you're a good teacher?
I think when I have kids who start out, they come in my classroom and they're hesitant to enter, or they're hesitant to try something in science. But when they leave, either at the end of a particular day that they were just like, oh God, I thought this would be horrible or whatever. Uh-huh. Or at the end of the year, they leave being like, you know what? Science is actually kind of cool. It's work, but uh-huh. it's cool. It's fun. There are cool things about it. I could do this. But that's what makes me feel really, really successful. And I've had, you know, from a kid who was like, I thought plants were really, really boring to, you know, a girl who she wouldn't even enter my classroom. And so I trained the other kids to make her feel welcome. Mm-hmm. Whenever she'd like come to the door, they'd be like, come join us. We Aww. Want you here. And by the end of the, I only had her for less than a semester. She got kind of switched in at the end of the year. I think she burned a lot of bridges and yeah. she was put with me. And actually the first time she and I met, we basically argued. So it wasn't really the best way to start.
Over science?
No, it was about behavior in the auditorium. but by the end of the year, she actually started working in groups with other kids in the class. Awesome. I mean, for at first she wouldn't even enter, then she mm-hmm. would, but she'd sit near me. Uh-huh. So, you know, like, uh-huh. I'd be up front taking notes and she'd be like right behind me, you know, just like writing stuff. Yeah. But she was doing it. And then, you know, it kind of slowly she became part of the class. And, you know, it was really nice. And, you know, we keep in touch now. And it's just it's nice to see her be like a more mature high school student right. and remember her when she was a little bit younger and a little less mature and a little bit more needy.
Yeah. So kind of speaking of that. You mentioned how you were interested in teaching middle school mm-hmm. When you decided to become a teacher. So what else do you really like about middle school?
Their energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's really frustrating because I'll be like, oh my God, I'm too tired for this. I can't deal. But the fact that they get so excited about stuff. Yeah. They are still little kids. And, you know, so many people forget that they look like adults, and so then they don't get treated like the little kids that they really are. Uh-huh. So the fact that I can just like wow them with stamps, I mean, like, how cheap is that, right?
Yes. I had dollar store items the other day and they were like, ah, let uh-huh. me look through and pick, like, you know, I had to give them a time limit because it was like, just pick the silly
right,
straw.
Right. Oh, look, these insects. I bought like these things. I gave a bunch of my stuff to Clea, but I just would have been. So if I felt like the kids needed a little bit of like external mm-hmm, motivation, mm-hmm. I'd be like, okay, we'll have prizes. So, you know, these are glow in the dark bugs. And they'd like pick carefully which glow in the dark bug they want. And you're like, well, maybe you don't want a glow in the dark bug. Maybe you want this eraser that looks like a lion. And then they're like, oh my God.
It's really fun. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. What advice would you give to people who are thinking about becoming teachers?
I'd say try to just work with kids as much as possible. I think something that helped me is I mean, it was tough. I didn't have any teaching experience outside of college teaching. So I had to do, I took a year off from graduate school. Mm-hmm. I was on leave trying to decide whether or not I wanted to continue. Uh-huh. I already knew I didn't want to continue, but I was told I should take some time to think about it.
Okay.
I took that time. I actually worked for Mad Science, which is so not me.
Really?
I'm not a Mad Science okay. person. I'm not like exuberant and, you know, like just not me. But doing that, I worked with like pre-K, I uh-huh. worked with third grade, I worked with seventh grade. I, you know, I kind of uh-huh. had some like different age groups I worked with. And I also got a job. I kind of lucked out. I met someone who was willing to give me a chance. She, let me work in an after-school program. I started cool. out as an assistant teacher for elementary school kids. Uh-huh. And after my first year, I became a lead teacher for third graders. So I had to plan, like, after-school curriculum and
right,
keep
right.
track of these kids. And I just ran it as a science class. Like, every day they did science experiments and, like, everything was couched in science. But it was great. I helped kids learn to read. I had one girl who her family is not readers, but she uh-huh. was just like, oh, yeah, I guess I have to read. And so I hooked her up with somebody to help her read who didn't speak English. And that person taught her how to use a dictionary. And they read Choose Your Own Adventure books together. And, you know, by the end of the year, she was able to tell people, like, she could read a she sign read and tell right. them where they were. And, you know, she was excited that suddenly, like, I had helped her unlock the world of words. And before that, it didn't have any meaning to her, you know. How often do you get that to happen? Like,
it's
never.
It's so exciting.
Yeah. Cool. So work with kids. That's really.
Awesome. That is really good advice because I think some people go into teaching as like, oh, it's going to be my second career. And I mm-hmm. kind of like kids. But I found people in my teaching program, the ones who, you know, paid the money and then got to student teaching and were like, oh.
Oh, that's not good.
Like, this is way harder to do and I don't like all of them. Like, it was harder for them. I think they ended up not kind of finding their place and having to try to figure out what else they would do, even though they had kind of put in their chips in the pot to do this thing that they wanted.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're nearing the end. So what I want you to think about is, are there any particular classes or students, particular students that stand out in your mind, either for something kind of like you've mentioned, like the girl who learned to read, or something about, or maybe a strange thing that's happened in your class, or anyway, any sort of like things that stand out in your mind, students or classes?
There are so many. I good and bad.
It's a very hard question.
Well, okay, so it isn't often you get to teach the same kids over and over again.
Right.
Right? So when I started teaching, I got this kid who, we didn't know it was going to end up being this way, but he ended up being in my science class 3 years in a row.
Wow.
So as I moved up, he also moved up.
Okay.
So,
did you teach 6th, 7th, and 8th?
Well, so I taught 6th grade math and science. So he had me for 2 classes in 6th grade. And then I was riffed. And then I was brought back to teach 7th and 8th grade science.
Oh.
So then he got me for 7th grade science because he switched into the advanced math class.
Okay.
And I was tied to those kids.
Right, right.
So he got me again for science. And then I still taught 8th grade the next year. So he got me again for 8th grade.
Wow.
And so he's had, like, he had me for 3 years of health, including another health class because I had to teach an elective and he got put in my elective.
Okay.
And so he also had me for, you know, math and health and all this.
Like 5 classes.
So I know. Poor kid. And the thing is I knew him so well by the end of the 3 years. Like, I knew he was lazy. He didn't want to do anything, you know. But the thing is, I remember when he was in 6th grade, right around the wassail, you know, like he's saying,
yes, yes,
he stood up and threw up right in the room.
What did you do?
So I was just like, okay, kids, why don't you all go to lunch now? Because luckily we'd finished testing. So I was just
go.
And I called the custodian and had him come. But this poor kid, he was so embarrassed.
And,
you know, I never mentioned it again to him anyway. I'd mentioned it to other people. But it was just so funny because he was just like, silent, you know. So then when I had him for 2 more years after that, I just kept being like, oh, this poor kid. He knows I know that he threw up all over his desk.
I know that embarrassing moment and they've followed you.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on my show. I am so glad and I'm sad that you're moving to Philly, but I'm excited for you in the future because you're going to be awesome. So thanks, Amity.
Thanks for having me.
That's the end of my show. Thanks for listening. You can find future episodes on adequateyearlyprogress.com, iTunes, and hopefully soon the Microsoft Podcast app. Thanks to the band Inspira's song Follow the Waves for the upbeat music you are dancing to right now. Thanks to freesound.org for the Creative Commons license for user SBYANDIJI's alarm bell sound, user Totia's yeah sound, and user Mental Sanity Off for the background chatter sound. Thanks for listening and talk to you next on November 30th.